This is the KPTZ Compass, your local news magazine for the Northeast Olympic Peninsula. This Thursday, October 19th, at precisely 10:19 in the morning, it's going to happen, the Great Shakeout Drill. Yes, it will be 10:19 on 10:19 when KPTZ will ask listeners to duck cover and hold, and in general to participate in a practice session to prepare for a major earthquake disaster. In this week's Compass, we talk with KPTZ Emergency Preparedness Advisor Rita Kepner about what is entailed in preparing for the worst. So now, let's go inside the Compass. So Rita Kepner is the Emergency Preparedness Advisor that KPTZ took on several years ago. As we were working out the very special relationship that KPTZ actually has now with the Office of Emergency Management for Jefferson County. And that's kind of a unique relationship, as I understand it. I mean,
as far as I know, there isn't any station in the country that has pre-arranged to have badged media people come into the EOC during an event and observe and then share information. I think it is unique. I keep looking. I haven't found one. There are some other stations that have kind of a phone relationship or an information sharing plan, but this is actually very special.
And it's interesting to me as a news person, because in order to get certified to be in the Emergency Operations Center, when there is a major emergency, like a big earthquake or a fire or so on, the Emergency Operations Center would become the Incident Command Center for that incident. And in order for us to be down there, we had to take Incident Command protocol training.
Mm-hmm.
So tell me a little bit about your background. I mean, you know, what is the source of your expertise?
Well, I have been involved in disaster response. I like to say, since I was about 3 and a half, I am a person who's a product of her total life. And at that age, I was accidentally left in a fire. And
what?
It was, a fireman came and woke me up in the middle of the night, scared me half to death. And the ancient days, they had these huge suits with a big long tube to minimize smoke inhalation. And I thought a huge, horrible critter was
some
abducting
kind of
me in the middle of the night, a monster. And so I kicked and screamed and fussed and yelled. And finally, the fine firefighter got me to the top of the flaming stairs where I could see the fire and I could see the wooden stairs getting ready to collapse. And I realized, oops, now I know what's going on. And we survived. He stood at the top of the steps for a few seconds, and, you know, even though I was only a child, I still remember it vividly. It's one of those life-changing experiences.
And really, you credit
down.
That with having...
I've been interested in helping other people who were fire survivors, eventually long, twisty career path, but got to work for the Army Corps of Engineers, volunteered for their... flood fighting, which they do a lot of, and eventually over the years became a reservist with FEMA. So an on-call reservist, kind of like National Guard. And under that hat, I've had the opportunity to help people in 73 different national catastrophic events. So fires and floods and earthquakes and hurricanes and even a plane crash. So I'd like to think I have insight into what happens after a disaster. Primarily, that's what I've seen. And I'd like to think I have some insight into what people could have done to minimize the impact.
And that's what we're really here to talk about today. This being, coming up on the 19th of October at 10:19 in the morning, 10:19 at 10:19, there is going to be what we're calling the Great Shakeout Drill. And
we're going to be pretending there is like a major earthquake event happening, and people are being asked to, you know, pretend that in their minds and ask them, well, where am I today, and where are my loved ones, and what do I do immediately, and what do they do immediately? What should we do if we hear an earthquake and tsunami warning come on the radio?
We probably you might hear the earthquake coming. Many people do, or you might feel it first. It is a noisy thing, so earthquakes can be very noisy. If there's an earthquake, duck, cover, and hold. It's the official mantra. So get yourself down as low as you can to the ground. Try to get something to cover your head so debris doesn't fall on your head, which, of course, is your most important to protect.
You have to say dive under a table or a desk.
Something, if you can't find one of those, get a pillow. Do anything to help protect your head. But if
stand in a doorway.
They used to say stand in a doorway, and that's got some mixed reviews. People have, first of all, fought to get to the doorway, and sometimes people got injured. If there's more than one person, it's not just your house and you're alone. And sometimes when people get in doorways, doors swing during earthquakes, and people have been injured with swinging doors, trying to stand in the door frame. So that's not recommended. I mean, it can be useful. I'd think about it a lot. You know your doorway and know where you are at the time. You may want to prefer under a table, under a coffee table. Anything that will help protect your head. Maybe even just get down on your hands and knees and tuck your chin and maybe pull your coat over the top of your head. But if you haven't got anything better, think in terms of protecting your head.
All right. And now the earthquake is over and you have survived. But everything is collapsed around you. And your phone is out and the electric is down. So what might you find yourself wishing you had done?
Well, I did mention the word think a minute ago, so let me put that out, a big and tall, bold print. Try to think before. We now have the thinking time, so that's a luxury. And think what you would feel like if you were in that situation. Really take this opportunity on the 19th to pretend for just a few minutes. It's quite empowering to go through that, kind of even do it theatrically. I mean, jump down, get under something, do that, and think, okay, power's down. What was my plan? Do I have a way of knowing how my loved ones are? Because many people, first they look at themselves. If they're not, bleeding profoundly, then they want to know, what about my loved ones? Are those other people okay or not? Where are they? So if you had a plan previously, then you might be able to implement parts of that plan. If you had a plan that said, we will all meet at X location, and X location is convenient for some of your loved ones, then you all get there, and that's a blessing. Maybe one person's missing and you still have that problem of, communication. Do we have a backup? So again, landlines might sometimes, it's very idiosyncratic in earthquakes. Sometimes the landlines are still working when the cell phones are down or vice versa. So what are the multiple means of communication that I might access? And then how do I begin to do that to find the person that I want to find? Do you have a plan that, for example, says all of your loved ones are going to call in to someone completely out of state, far away?
And why is that?
Well, because if you do get communication, if you find you have a device that's actually working, the chances of you getting a call through across town are almost zip in a earthquake environment. But the possibility of getting a wire out across the country is much statistically much higher. So you might be able to get your in-laws in New Hampshire when you can't get the neighbor who's just a quarter mile away. So if everyone has agreed in advance, and I did this with my poor in-laws in New Hampshire, and they were horrified the last time I practiced with them to be reminded that their daughter lives in an earthquake zone. But they were really good sports, and we practiced. But find someone far away. Ask all your loved ones to plan to contact that person so that even if You can't make that quarter mile gap or that half mile gap or 10 mile gap. You might be able to call in to Aunt Sally, and she says, yes, George called in. He's okay. He was in his car, and he's over in Port Angeles, but he's okay.
And that's because all of the local exchanges tend to, in a major event like that, everybody's trying to call each other. So basically, all of the local lines are tied up. Although, I think cell technology changed that a little bit.
A little bit. Mm-hmm.
But still, there can be a surge of demand, and mm-hmm. Phone calls can be very difficult to get through on cell phones. Isn't that right? So
yes.
They actually advise texting, to text.
Yep.
Right?
Texting can be beneficial because it uses less bandwidth. Of course, the important reminder that we must not forget is please don't try to call 911 unless it's really a life-threatening situation, because those lines are likely to be jammed. So if your needs are lesser, you know, wait a day or two or three if you can get by, you know, and wait, because there will be people who can't wait. And if you jam up the lines, then you've done a neighbor a disservice.
Let's talk about that wait. I mean, in a worst-case scenario, how long might one be waiting before any kind of professional help arrives at your remote place out on Maristone Island?
Well, obviously, it all depends, and so there's no one simple answer that I wish we could all have and hold on to. If you have a loved one who just got a bookcase toppled on them and they need to be retrieved so that they can breathe, you don't have any time. You personally better be able to lift that bookcase.
Right.
And if you don't know how to do that, if you don't know how to be the first responder for your loved one in your home, there are classes, and I highly recommend a certification, a CERT class, a Citizens Emergency Response Team, I believe it's what it stands for. Classes are given locally. Red Cross gives classes. So it may be you only have 2 minutes in your specific circumstance to take a life-saving action. Or it may be that your life-saving action is keeping yourself fed for 6 months.
For 6 months.
Or
for
maybe more, depending on the magnitude of the event. In this country, in the United States, we're incredibly good at helping each other across state lines. So we saw the magnitude of the horrors in the floods in Texas and the hurricanes in Florida, and really how quickly people from around the country moved in and were able to help. So hopefully we would be able to count on that kind of response in our area, so we would only need days or weeks before we could expect some outside assistance.
I understand that in Jefferson County, I mean, if you're thinking that you're going to be able to go to the store and stock up like after the earthquake, that probably is not such a good idea, right?
No, and it's not going to work like it did in even Houston, because we don't have multiple freeways coming into Port Townsend from all over the country as they do. We have a bridge that's likely to have collapsed, or maybe a couple in the case of Maristone, because we got, you know, more bridges than one to get to me. So we will be at the end of a fairly long trail for getting assistance. If we have a major event, you know, you just have to think about it. Most of us are very emotional and not logical, and we want our help first. But think about it. If you were an emergency manager, are you going to send your resources to a place where you can save 500,000 people by bringing them there? Or are you going to send your resources to a place where you're going to save a couple hundred people by bringing them there? You know, it's very difficult for people to make those kinds of triage choices. But those are the things that have to go on, and they will send resources to downtown Seattle and downtown Portland before they come out to Port Townsend. It just has to be that way.
So have you got in your head a shopping list of things that people should think about? Medical supplies?
I tend to think in two levels of the long term because of my experiences. simple things on the shopping list, you know, again, it's so difficult for somebody like you and I to say, be sure that you have canned milk and peanut butter and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, if your kid's allergic to peanut butter, that won't go. If you're, you know, lactose intolerant, that won't work. So really, people have to think. They have to sit down and figure out what's the best list for themselves. What do you use every day that you would really miss if it's gone for a while? What are the medications that you have to have or you're going to get very sick and maybe die? You know, who are the people that you need to help you with certain things in your life, and how are you going to interact with them? Unfortunately, there is no magic bullet. It really is so dependent on individuals thinking through their personal needs. And I can't emphasize that enough, because it makes such a difference. That's the immediate and even the moderate, the middle term response. Because what foods are good for me are not going to be good for you, and vice versa. What medicines are good, or, you know, who has a pet and how much pet food do you have? All those kinds of issues, they're very personal. Do you need oxygen? Do you need power? Do you need to have a, you know, a diesel fuel bank? All those things are so individual, per person, per family. So you have to think. Get those things in order, and then what about 3 months, 6 months down the line? And, you know, the fire people down in California right now, they're in an interesting situation that displays some of the kinds of help that they obviously need temporary housing. We might, right. If yes. Our shelters are destroyed, need temporary housing. So people then come into thinking in terms of what is short-term or maybe long-term temporary housing look like. What can I do by myself? Planning. Thinking. Do you want to get insurance for a whatever event?
It seems to me that we have to really think about, I mean, so this week's drill is about earthquakes.
Yes. But
yeah, the fires down in California were reminding me that the way I prepare for an earthquake has actually got to be quite different from the way I prepare for a fire, particularly fast-moving fires like the ones that took people by surprise on Monday morning in Santa Rosa, when, you know, a huge part of the town actually like burned in a matter of hours.
Yeah,
you know,
in the middle of the night when they were sleeping.
Right, middle of the night. Yeah. And at times like that, I mean, I was thinking about friends of mine I know who have a specially equipped van. They actually have tents and sleeping bags and food and, I mean, you know, we talk about a, you know, like having a grab and go kit, but they have a grab and go vehicle that is like, you know, constantly ready to go off and take the high ground wherever that is. And but let's talk about grab and go kits. You know, like what should I have in my grab and go kit? It's
the same answer is think,
right?
Because it's going to be individual. If you have,
but there's certain things we should mention, like, you know,
you should
a
have
flashlight,
some,
a radio.
A radio would be, honestly, would be my very most important thing to grab.
Yeah.
You can listen to the radio in your car for a while, but if you have a small portable radio, and especially if the kinds that you can either use a solar power or wind up to keep recharged, you don't want to turn on your car and use up all your fuel just to listen to the radio, although, you know, that might be a choice. But yeah, I'd grab a radio, and then most people say you need some basic informational things if you can get them, financial records. I know that's important. I'm not sure.
Your fire insurance policy.
A fire insurance policy would be great if you're running out the door. However, eventually, some of those financial things can catch up with you at a later date through the mail, through the electronic connections that we will be able to reestablish in 6 months or a year. But do you want to wait 6 months or a year to file your policy claim? I mean, so no, try to take it with you. Try to get some of those financial documents in a place where you can grab them and go.
So we were talking a little bit yesterday about the fires in California, and we both have friends who are being affected by that right now.
Yes, we do.
I have a friend who just texted me this morning that she's got to go out and buy herself a change of clothes because she just left basically with the clothes on her back when she got the evacuation.
And some people means that's their pajamas. I heard right. someone talking just this morning that they were still in their pajamas. Yeah. And again, it's very complicated, but yeah, if you have some cash in your pocket of your pajamas, you're going to be able to buy something. If you don't, then you're going to figure out how to borrow money, or maybe you grabbed something that has a credit card number or something where you can go. But also, again, in this country, we have some amazing neighbors. And sometimes our neighbors come from, you know, a few states away, but they're neighbors. Red Cross is very good about trying to help people if you can get in contact with Red Cross. And that's one of the common things they do after fires is help people get some clothes to wear. So those things will begin to happen in the fire zones. And those things would eventually begin to happen in an earthquake zone, although we would be likely to have clothes because we could probably go back in the rubble and pull out some things. And if we couldn't, maybe a neighbor could, and we could share and borrow for a few weeks. Again, I can't emphasize enough that people, when they hear this drop, cover, and hold drill come up on the 19th, that they crawl under something and think a few minutes. What would I do if I am dressed as I'm dressed, if I'm in the location that I'm in, if maybe I'm in my car, maybe, you know, what would I actually do if this were the real moment? You know, where's my dog? And, you know, what about my grandchildren? And muddle through all those ideas when it's a drill. And the emotions are not as painful.
Well, yeah, let's talk a little bit about that. I mean, we have seen just in the last few days, like, I don't know how many reports of people who lost everything. And how do you prepare yourself emotionally for that? Is there any way we can, like, you know, prepare ourselves emotionally? Or is it just
something
you have to...
I think in Port Townsend, we do that remarkably well in this grand area. Meditation, learn to let go. No, I'm serious. I know. And it's amusing. Okay. Learn to not be so attached to things so that if you lose everything, you can, as you see sometimes people go, oh, well, I mean, I ran into a retired couple after a fire in California recently, and they said, yeah, that was our retirement gonna be. And you know what? We don't have to sort through all those boxes and old photos. It's done. Isn't that something? Isn't that great? I mean, you know, hey, I think some of us could relate to that. But they were, you know, they were emotionally processing and in a positive way. They had come to find a place where for them, they could say, I can't get it back. So what do I do else? Do I sit there and mourn and grieve forever, or do I figure out how to let go and start a new life? And yes, you have to grieve. I'm going to emphasize grieving is a very important thing to be able to do. And I just actually had a lesson that said grieving is a issue in our society we don't do very well. We sort of poo-poo people who grieve much. But grieving is most healthily done, most satisfying, if we do it in a communal way. So that means if we just lost our house in an earthquake, and so did all our neighbors, that we find two or three neighbors and we grieve communally. And if it's done right, and there is a acceptance of community, communal grieving, mm-hmm. people bounce back better, quicker. And it's, I mean, people will say, oh, it's about the people. Well, it is about the people, but it's even a level higher than that. It's about the group. It's about togetherness. It's about oneness. And so the best thing you can do to prepare emotionally is develop your spiritual skills, your coping skills, the things that you do when you're in trouble, build your friendships so that you have some resiliency.
Well, that brings me to another point that I really wanted to make, which is that you can do that in a really organized fashion. And down in California, we did it. And up here, we've done it as well, which is to organize neighborhood preparedness groups.
Yes.
And this is really simple. I mean, we've actually only done it once in our neighborhood, but we had like all of our neighbors over to our house, and everybody wrote down on a sheet of paper all of their contact information and what they had, what services they might be able to provide, and And we have the intention of like doing this regularly now, so that that community is already there, and we have like a mutual reliance group.
Yes, your community will do well afterwards too.
Right.
Because it's a tremendous thing to be able to do. And I envy you that. Some places that, you know, the homes and the spaces are just too distant from one to another, and people don't have strong relationships with their neighbors that are, you know, maybe a little too far away. They know them in passing, but they just don't have strong relationships. And so it'll be harder.
But it can
folks.
Be done with
it
intention.
It can be done.
You can just say, all right, well, I have this intention.
And we have the magic of our computers nowadays. So yes. There are an awful lot of people who are using things. Well, let's mention Nixle, because that's important.
Yes.
Nixle is run through our emergency office here in the county. And when they know that something bad is happening or happened, they can post a notice that goes out to you. If you've signed up for Nixle, which is easy to do, you can go online, nixle.com, I believe it is.
Nixle is Nixle.
And then sign up by your zip code.
And it's really useful. I mean, actually, Nixle, it doesn't have to be like the worst earthquake in history for Nixle to send out a notice about it. In fact, if there's a bad accident on Highway 104 or the Hood Canal is blocked or power lines are down somewhere, there will be a Nixle about it. And if you're going that way, you might be able to like detour before you get stuck in traffic. I mean, it's been a useful thing for me in the past.
Yeah, it is a wonderful thing. So I, if you're not already on Nixle, please look it up and sign up. It's absolutely fantastic. You can get a warning on your phone, on your computer. And then the cousin that they're using is the Nextdoor software. A lot of communities are using that. And that's set up with a geographic circle. And the people who are in that neighborhood then can communicate with each other if they sign up. So what I've seen happen on Merrowstone...
That's a website, right?
It is on a... It's, yes, you go to a website, look up Nextdoor, they'll be happy to sign you up.
Is that a .com?
That one is probably a .com, and that one unfortunately comes with advertisements that blip, blip, blip through your screen before you get to the real stuff, which is annoying.
Yeah.
But it's there, and I've seen it work on Merrowstone Island when our island coordinator gets a Nixle, and we're not sure everybody in the islands has signed up. So I will get, on my system, I'll get a Nixle, and I'll get a copy of the same message on Nextdoor. So it's another tool.
Well, I see that we've pretty much run out of time here, so I'm just going to say one more thing about getting information in the aftermath of a major calamity of one sort or another, and that is tune in to KPTZ 91.9 FM in Port Townsend, because we have a special mission to bring updates about
a special
like
mission
yes,
and a special right. opportunity with the relationship with our emergency manager. You're not going right. to find it any better anywhere else in the country. So KPTZ is the place to turn. You're going to get to know what's going on straight from the emergency management office. You will be getting the best information that they have. And so KPTZ, yay.
Thank you very much, Rita.
You're very welcome.
With KPTZ Emergency Preparedness Advisor Rita Kepner, this is Steve Evans reporting for KPTZ Community Radio News. This week's KPTZ Compass was written and produced by Steve Evans. You can listen to podcasts of past Compass programs at the kptz.org website, where you can also stream KPTZ Live 24 hours a day. For the news team here at KPTZ 91.9 FM in Port Townsend, I'm Steve Evans.